Chapter 16. Angron awakes with a start from a nightmare about smothering. He feels as though his head is nodding, even though it is still. A snarl rises in his throat as he recognizes the telltale after-effects of the High Rider's narcotic tranquilizers. As his body grows larger by the day, his jailers have needed to pump increasingly higher amounts of the dangerous drugs into his blood to make him sleep, holding back only when they were just short of stopping his heart. Dull thunder reverberates around him in a rhythmic throb. He wants to stretch and shake the lingering heaviness out of his limbs, but there's no room. A nauseating stench fills the hot, wet air. His eyes are open, and yet he can barely see anything outside of a quivering reddish murk. It is then that he realizes the walls are moving in time with the pounding thunder. It is a heartbeat. Angron is inside something.
Angron?
He hears a weak voice coming from below him, and a shaking hand takes desperate hold of his ankle. He recognizes the voice from the caves where they live between fights.
Hex?
Angron strains, pushing against the slick, shivering walls around him. All he can see is the head and shoulders of the other gladiator beneath him.
An inked worm, says Hex. They've put us in a damn inked worm.
Angron has heard of this before. The Dishaeans love to incapacitate slaves and feed them whole to one of Nuceria's colossal sea worms. Awakening trapped inside the creature, they will have mere minutes to cut themselves free before they suffocate, all while the High Riders laugh and drink and wager upon the outcome. They have no weapons, and an inked worm's hide is as rigid as stone. A frustrated cry bellows from Angron's lips as his fingers scratch at the stomach lining encasing them, trying to find any weakened spot or leverage to exploit. The conditions inside grow steadily hotter by the moment, and the air thinner. Angron ceases to breathe, holding his breath as long as he can to save oxygen for Hex. He cannot find anything to grab onto. No old scar to tear open, and no ulcer to hook his fingers into. Angron looks down. Hex is struggling to remain conscious. Only one option remains for them. They must try to climb.
Take hold of me, says Angron.
He reaches down and pulls Hex's arms around his waist.
Hold on to me, Hex.
Hex clasps his hands together, using his strength to stay linked to Angron as the youth tries to effect their escape. Angron squirms, grunting with exertion, as he swims his way up the creature's digestive tract. The worm's stomach acid covers him, but he puts the white-hot pain of his burning flesh from his mind. He focuses every bit of his will on wriggling higher, an inch at a time. Several times Angron feels Hex's grip slacken, threatening to break, before the man clutches tightly around him again. The instinct to survive is granting the gladiator new strength, but even this will be exhausted before long. There is the dimmest bit of light ahead, a slender line of brighter red that marks the gap between the worm's mandible jaws. The hope of escape fires his muscles with new strength, enough to keep him from sagging back down into the darkness. Angron's heartbeat pounds in his ears, so loudly that it nearly drowns out that of the leviathan that has devoured them. He wills himself on, slipping and grasping for purchase, refusing to give credence to the searing pain of his flesh. Just a little further until freedom. Just a little more. Light pours in through the tearing flesh and spraying ichor as he wrenches the beast's jaws apart. The worm resists as the bones in its mandibles crack, clamping down against Angron's fingers and bending them back until they dislocate. But Angron will not be denied, and the crowd roars as its favourite gladiator emerges from the worm's howling maw. He takes in a gulping lungful of air, falling forward onto the sand like a castaway washing up upon dry land. He reaches back, hauling Hex out from the worm that is still rolling and twitching in its death throes. Angron rolls Hex onto his back, but the other warrior does not stir. His hands go to Hex's throat, but there is no pulse against his fingers. Angron peels the mucus and digestive acid away from his brother fighter's lips, clearing the airway as he presses Hex's chest to force his heart to resume pumping blood.
Ooh!
The maggot's eyes descend around them.
Angron Thalker is trying to resuscitate the vaunted Hex. Can he do it? Will he prevail and drag him from the jaws of death itself? Speak with your coin, friends. New odds are made. What will you wager?
The youth refuses to listen to the sadistic banter of the high riders, or the baying of the bloodthirsty crowd. He continues his fight to keep Hex alive, stimulating his heart and breathing to drive the knife fighter's body to take the labor back up itself. Cold trickles up Angron's backbone as the life flees from his brother's flesh. The color drains from Hex's face, his lips speckling with the pale blue of the newly dead. Angron sinks back on his haunches in the hot dust, the grit coagulating with the blood and mucus slathering him into a rubbery grayish-pink film. He reaches for Hex, pouring away enough of the filth covering the corpse's face so that he can close his eyes.
Failure!
Chirp the high riders to a mixture of cheers and abuse from the arena.
Angron has failed to drag Hex from the shores of death. His knives shall taste no more blood for you, dear friends. Winners collect. Losers, pay your debts.
I couldn't save him, says Angron.
One by one, he snaps his fingers back into their joints. He looks up at Onomaeus as the old pit fighter tears his ragged tunic to dress the youth's wounds.
Hex, I couldn't save him. They didn't want you to save him, Onomaeus replies. That isn't what our lives are to the High Riders. The only thing they want from us is something for them to laugh at when we fight and something to cheer over when we die. That's all we will ever be to them.
Angron stops his mentor from binding a weeping burn across his chest. Wounds that deep always somehow vanish come morning, healing over into smooth stripes, even though they are severe enough to kill any other man. Angron has inflicted enough of them himself to know. A whimper draws Angron's attention. He peers across the dimness of their cave, seeing a young boy shudder upon the ground, the slaver brand still raw and pink on his flesh.
Jatura, says Onomaeus. The boy tasted his first of the hot dust yesterday, barely made it out, and so, like the rest of us, he struggles now. He cannot escape the Red Sands, not even in his dreams.
Angron rises, stepping over the forms of sleeping slaves as he makes his way over to Jatura. He looks down at the youth, shivering in a fetal huddle, his brow glittering with his nightmare's panic sweat.
"Leave him be,"
says Onomaeus, appearing at Angron's side.
"He will have to grow accustomed to the torment, if he wishes to keep company among the living."
Sinking slowly to his knees, Angron places a hand on Jatura's shoulder, the movement quieter and softer than one would think possible for a man of his size. He closes his eyes, and Tethys feels the boy's pain as though it is his own. Heat, knifing blades, screams, and the splash of hot blood in his eyes. Angron winces for a moment, and the boy goes still, his cries silenced as they are replaced by deep, dreamless sleep. Onomaeus stares at Angron as the gladiator pulls his hand away.
"You what?"
The old man looks between the becalmed Jatura and Angron.
"What did you do?"
"I don't know."
Angron shakes his head. Within the memory, awe overcomes Tethys at what he has just witnessed.
"What's the first thing you remember, Angron?"
asks Onomaeus.
"The very first thing."
"Cold,"
Angron replies.
"The mountain."
Angron frowns.
"No, different from the mountain. This was an unnatural cold. metal, not stone. There were voices, then light, then...
He grips his head.
I can't remember.
You aren't meant for this place, says Onomaeus. Wherever you came from, whatever it is that you are destined for, you'll not find it within these walls. And one day, these caves and these chains will not be able to hold us, and you'll be free to find your destiny.
My destiny is beside you, Onomaeus, says Angron, with my brothers and sisters, living free of the hot dust.
The grizzled fighter smiles.
Well, then free of the hot dust we shall be.
Other slaves have witnessed what Angron did for Jetura. They shuffle forth towards him, fear and suspicion mixing with a kind of reverence, a desire to be similarly blessed. Angron sees something strange in their eyes, something that he has never seen before. Hope. They sleep in a great unbroken chain that night, each laying a hand on the other, ending with Angron. Tethys feels lifetimes of abuse and torment rack his father as he takes the pain of his brothers and sisters into himself. Tethys can feel the will of his young father harden into steel, staring up at his masters above, weeping tears of blood. He knows that a reckoning is coming, that soon he will leave this cave and tear the High Riders down from their gilded thrones, that he will give his brothers and sisters their liberty, even if he has to spill an ocean of blood to do so. Tonight he gives them all that he has the power to give. If only for a short time, he grants them a reprieve from the torture that consumes their lives. Morning will come and bring the hot dust, but until then, Angron suffers so that he might give his family some measure of peace.